The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
On this edition of our Cubs Talk podcast brought to you by Wintrust, I talk with former Cubs GM and now special assistant in the Yankees front office, Jim Hendry, about how the game has changed, the Yankee signing of Gerrit Cole, and how it affects the market for everyone else, and some of his fondest memories and regrets and triumphs as Cubs GM, plus Tony Andracki with the latest on the Cubs.
Let's play two.
And welcome into our Cubs Talk podcast brought to you by our great partners at Wintrust, home of Cubs Checking. I'm David Kaplan, and look who's our special guest today, former Cubs GM, now with the Yankees, Jim Hendry. My guy, I was telling these guys last night when I knew we were going to talk to you that in 2006, you're in Orlando. You've got money to spend, and you're all in to try and get DeRosa and Jason Marquis. And I call your cell, and you always answer, hello. And I said, Jimmy, hey, I've got to go and have a heart procedure. Let me finish this Ted Lilly deal, and I'll call you later. Like, what did he just say? Take us back to that moment.
Well, it was a crazy moment. It's all true, but as time has gone by, it was true. I was on the gurney having a second EKG, and I was supposed to be back at the Scout of the Year banquet to present Tim Wilkin, our great scouting director from the Cubs then, with the Scout of the Year award. And I'd been having these chest pains for a couple days, and I kind of played it off as I thought it was a gallstone or something. Uh-huh. So anyhow, the real story was I was on the EKG machine when Ted's agent, Larry O'Brien, called me and said, we got a deal. And but I did not know at the time that, you know, 2 hours later I was going under. So that part of the story gets a little bit
embellished.
Yeah, not by me, but the world. But what I stop and realize is I still don't know why I had the phone in my hand.
That's the other thing. And what are you doing taking a call from me?
Yeah. So I remember the doc, like an hour before, I said, Doc, I got to get to work. I got a deal going. If I'm hurting tomorrow, I'll come back. And he goes, if you go home today, you might not be back tomorrow.
God
so I figured,
bless.
Okay.
Puts it
I'm
in perspective.
I'm going to miss the banquet. Yeah. So that, yeah.
So you and the Yankees signed last night Gerrit Cole for $324 million for 9 years. And I remember you paid Ted Lilly for 40.
Yeah.
And you spent, you know, a decent amount of money that offseason.
Yeah.
What you spent that offseason on all your guys was less than what you gave Gerrit Cole yesterday.
Yeah.
Can you believe it?
No, it's crazy. I mean, the world's changed. And I remember the Tribune Company was being sold, and those people were great to me, Dennis Fitzsimon and Jim Dowdle before him, God rest his soul. So it was kind of a last-ditch effort. It wasn't the normal way we were going along in the system and all that, but we hit some bullseyes that year. But I remember, like, thinking, man, I love Ted, but $40 million is a lot of dough. But he ended up earning every penny of it, as you know. But it's just the nature of the world now. I mean, the elite players are you know, few and far between, say, or the really elite, and those guys are going to get huge dollars. I don't know if a free agent pitcher – that's done any better up to his last couple of free agent years in a while than Cole has. So he's kind of what we needed. We've won 103 games, won 100 the year before. Tremendous job by Aaron Boone the first 2 years of managing. But it seems like when we've gotten October, we needed that guy that there's your dude and he can go out there and win you a couple games like, you know, like the Washington guys did this year or like Houston the last couple to get there, you know.
I looked at the Yankee situation. Now you're working in it. And I said on the air earlier this morning on radio, look, it's just different. They've won 28 rings. It's the Yankees. And I don't care if one team came up and said, oh, I'll give you 325. The Yankees would be like, oh, I'll give you 350. Like, they weren't going to be outbid. What's it like working for them?
Well, you know, what your point maybe yesterday is well taken, but I mean, Hal Steinbrenner really has done a really nice job. We've stayed under the luxury tax now for 3 or 4 years, and in fairness to Hal, he's been criticized for not spending enough money, like they're not like your dad was and this and that, but he has a high level of fairness, and it's a really cohesive relationship between Brian and the Steinbrenner family. You know, Cass has been there 22 years as a GM in that market, which is absolutely unheard of. It's a pleasure to watch him work and be able to handle things, you know, probably better in certain situations than I did. And last in 10 for me was a good run, but a tiresome one. He's still fresh as a daisy. But we really don't flippantly, maybe it was like that before I got there, but it's not like just went by at all costs. We've walked away from a lot of deals and been criticized for not being like the old Yankees. So I think we wanted to get Cole. I think in a perfect world, maybe we thought it might be 8 for 280 to 300. So, and Scott did a great job like he always does. And I think there were other clubs as we're hearing today that were in the threes. And we started feeling yesterday afternoon, if we do get him, it's going to have a 3 on it. You know, so
it is what it is.
Yeah. So, but he's, you know, and the kid came along with great success at the right time. And in fairness to him, I think he made up his mind where I want to go, and that's, you know, obviously we didn't know that, but obviously he directed Scott to get the best deal he can, but I want to end up in New York.
So, you know, people in Chicago are like, what do you mean the Cubs are selling, you know, giving money back, getting under the luxury tax? The Red Sox have said, we've got to get under the tax. Now the Astros are saying, our owner wants us to kind of reduce payroll. Everything's cyclical, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so, and like I said, we've been under it the last couple of years, and there were times where we felt like, hey, if we can get this guy or that guy, and you just, you know, you have to respect ownership. The New York Yankees provide as much as I've ever seen for any player, the amenities. The Steinbrenner family take all the excuses out of it. There's no reason why you shouldn't win or play well once you get there. If you can handle the big stage, you're going to have everything at your beck and call that you need to be successful. I admire them the way they do that. They do that with the scouting department. They do that in the player development department. And I think anybody that ever played there would tell you that, you know, if you can't get it done, you can't get it done. But it's not because of you didn't have this or didn't have that. But that being said, the payrolls, like I said, we've gone in cycles, and I still believe that you should be able to win a World Series without, you know, just blowing everybody out money-wise and be able to do it under the tax structure and the clubs that have been winning, they've done it without the biggest payroll sometimes too. So
if you could go back and restart your Cubs career as the GM, mm-hmm. that was, I think, 2002.
Yeah.
Like July of 2002, I remember right. Andy came down. I think he fired Don Baylor, installed right. you as the right. GM. What would you do differently? Not in terms of individual moves. Yeah. What have you learned now that you go, boy, I wish I knew that then?
Well, you know, at first, the first couple of years, it started out in kind of a high fashion. A lot of things that we did were right.
Right.
And certainly looking back, it wasn't because I was some genius, but one of those real lucky first GM jobs where, like, every trade we made the first year or two kind of clicked, even they weren't big things. You know, it was Grzelanik and Karros for Hundley, or it was, you know, picking up Randall Simon or Glanville, and then obviously some good ones like Ramirez or Derek Lee. So, for a while there, I, looking back, I don't know what I would have done differently the first couple of years. Obviously, when you look back with regrets, everybody used to criticize the Tribune Company. Oh, they don't do this, they don't do that. I have no issues with how I was ever treated by the Tribune Company. And I believe that we had our chances to win. We didn't get over the hump. You know, we should have won in 03, the Bartman game. And we were better in 04 and didn't get in. You know, so that's not anything that I would ever blame on ownership. And then things got, you know, later on it was tough, nobody's fault. The club got sold two
right.
times in 4 or 5 years, and it was a different world. But as a GM, you know, you don't make excuses or blame this or blame that. And even at the end, when it didn't go well, the Ricketts treated me tremendously. You know, that wasn't what they had in mind when they got there. They thought Jim might be good enough to stay. And at the end, it was the right call. And then obviously Theo is as good as it gets. So, getting back to your question, I think I was, you know, I probably in hindsight, I would have maybe been a little more active overseeing the draft before Timmy came, Wilkin. Back then, I was brought up in the school of you're the GM, hire scouting director.
And let him do
his
deal.
Yeah, and I don't think I would have been out there seeing 50 guys, but I was pretty much like, hey, if I'm going to evaluate you as the scouting director, I got to let you make the picks. You know, and now the world's a little different. I think Theo is more involved in the draft. Brian does it a little bit more the old school way, but we've got Damon Oppenheimer who's doing it for 20 years. And I didn't do it for sure when Timmy got there because we had both done that job before that, and I always thought he was better at it than I was anyhow. But I think most of your regrets are, you know, like, hey, you know, maybe I shouldn't have signed that guy near the end, or I took a gamble. Milton Bradley thing was a disaster. But structurally early, I had everything. Looking back, you didn't have a lot of personnel there, you know, but there was something to be said for that, too, of the less guys we had working, they had a big stake in it, you know. And Andy taught me that, too. Like, we didn't have, like, you know, 10 extra people in the office working on arbitration like you do now. The world's changed. And I wasn't as rigid as people think about being Joe old school, but there were certain things I didn't adapt to maybe early on at the, you know, when it first was introduced, and maybe, you know, I had Chuck Watherson was really good. We probably should have expanded that department earlier. You know, things like that. But in the overall, I mean, it was more good than bad. It was not real good at the end, and we can all make up reasons why, but it's certainly, I put the onus on myself that when we did have our chances to finish it off.
Finish it.
Yeah, and we should have done it in 03.
So if you look at this current team, you've got Javi Baez is arguably their best player. You drafted him. And you look at Wilson Contreras. He's a two-time All-Star catcher, arguably their most marketable player here at these meetings. You signed him. Does that give you some real pride that, hey, man, we left you guys some pretty good talent?
Well, I don't look at it like that. First of all, I didn't run the draft then, so I give Tim Wilkin credit for Baez. Oneri Fleeta ran Latin America. So I always feel uncomfortable when GMs hang their hat on who they drafted. I mean, the it's not like football or basketball. You know, there's such a gap between our sport amateurly and the big leagues different than the other. So I think collectively, you know, Theo and I had such a good relationship before he got there. He knew when he got there that it wasn't some colossal mess. It was a tremendous job that he did. And I think we knew that it had to be kind of when we went a little crazy in the backload of deals when the Tribune instructed us to do that on the way out for them. I knew there'd be a price to pay down the road if you just didn't keep going with that. Like when we had the PV deal done, we couldn't finish it off because now the ownership was up in flux. Things like that. So I think you had to have a guy like Theo. If Jim Hendry stood up at the podium after 10 and 11 or 9 and 10 and said, hey, we're going to kind of tear this down and we're going to be real good in 4 or 5 years, I might have the same plan, but that wasn't going to work for a guy that had been there 9 years with no ring.
Right.
You know, Theo, Brian Cashman, Brian Sabian.
Cachet.
That's what you needed to have, that kind of, you know, guys with jewelry and great Hall of Fame executives to do it that way. And they executed it masterfully.
Who is the biggest one other than Peavy that you look back and go, son of, I could have had that guy and I didn't get him?
Well, you know, I think in hindsight, you know, I always wanted a better left-hand hitter. After we got beat in 08, or even going into 08, we were really good, but a little too right-handed. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't all the way show up till the postseason. And we had a deal in place at the deadline for Raul Banez. And at that time, Jimmy Edwards was contributing well. Fugidomi hadn't hit the late-season skid like he, you know, did a couple years in a row. So we had it looked like we were somewhat covered, but I kind of really wanted to do that. And then I talked to Lou, and it wasn't like, you know, would have been a little uncomfortable for Lou as far as having too many guys for the same spot, so more guys would be sitting every day. So it was just kind of we collectively decided not to. And, you know, how that bites you. A couple weeks later, Fukudomi went down, and Jimmy was a little more nicked up. And then by the time we got to L.A., you know, it was Billingsley and Kuroda, and it made it awful tough on a right-hand lineup. So that team was good enough to win, as you know. I think we all thought, in 08, the best two teams in baseball were the Phillies and the Cubs.
Yep.
And Gillick and I, Pat and I, talked in September. We had this great series at Wrigley, like 2 games apiece, just 4 great games, and Pat's the greatest, Pat Gillick. And we talked at the cage the last day. He says, hey, I think we'll be doing this again a month from now, you know. And that we didn't get to them, and they became the world champs. So those things kind of, I shouldn't say haunt me, but bother me, because the windows to win, history would have been a little different, whether it was 03 or 08, that, you know, it could have happened earlier than it did. It didn't.
Today, now you're with the New York Yankees, but we're looking around the industry and we're seeing managers who have never coached, have never managed. Aaron Boone doing it in New York. We saw the Cubs hire David Ross, has never even been a coach. Do you like that trend?
Well, I'm not really opposed to it, because we're talking about high-end people that were players that have a great way about them. And as you know, the world's different now. Sports are different now. Players are different now. You know, so in the old days, it would have been like impossible for Jim Hendry, you're really a really good college baseball coach. When I got into pro ball, you know, people say, oh, you're going to try to manage someday in the big. I said, I've got no chance. I didn't play. I didn't play pro ball. Or, you know, that's not the way you're viewed. I wanted to get in. I did some time managing the minor leagues, but I knew my future in pro ball was going to be maybe in the front office. Nowadays, we're, you know, we're hiring guys that coach in college and take them right to the big leagues. You know, so that's a big change. But when you're talking about the Boones and the Rosses of the world, you're talking about guys that their whole pedigree is the game. They have tremendous respect from the players. You don't have to be the greatest player that ever lived to be a great manager. The Jimmy Lelands of the world, to me, are, you know, Bobby Cox. They weren't great players.
Right, La Russa.
So you just have to have that skill set, and that'll never change. I mean, you can get all the analytic information you want from upstairs, and it's very helpful. And you have to have a manager that's very receptive to that. But when he walks in that locker room, the 25 guys playing still have to know who's running that clubhouse. And those type of guys have that presence and still have great relationships with the front office.
There was a great story that you told. So you leave Creighton, where you took the team to the College World Series, didn't have the biggest budgets, and then you leave and go to the Marlins. Mm-hmm. I think you were paid less with the Marlins than you were at Creighton.
Yeah.
And the first draft, they call you to the front of the room.
Yeah, that's a great story. Gary Hughes, who is a lifetime friend, mentor, and Sam Hughes has been a great scout for the Cubs for years and now working with us. Gary's the one that talked me into coming to the Marlins, and they created a great job for me. I really didn't have an interest in pro ball. If it wasn't for the expansion possibility and Dave Dombrowski, Gary, John Bowles, all their hierarchy were like me. They didn't play pro ball. So it was one of those, well, if I'm ever going to take a chance, take it. If not, doesn't work out, I can go back and find a college job, you know. So I was in the first draft, and Gary invited me. I didn't think that was anything special at first, and for the whole week there's like six guys in the room. So I've got all my guys from my area in Florida, and I had, you know, about six or seven guys, and we took a guy that I liked in the fourth round, so I'm all happy, you know. If you're going to scout and you've been coaching all your life, at least you want to sign the players.
Right.
It's kind of like your only Super Bowl day as a scout. So we get to about the 11th round, and there's like four or five guys up in the next couple rounds I like. So Gary calls me up to the front of the room, and I'm thinking he's going to ask me about, you know, Kaplan or Smith or whatever. And he goes, hey, Jim, would you do me a favor? He said, Cheryl's busy on the computer over there. He says, we're out of the fat, free Fig Newtons in the back. Would you run up to the Publix grocery? And I must not have showed, you know, how disappointed I was, but I got in the car. I was going, you know, I was so pissed. And, you know, three or four years later, the Cubs called and wanted me to be the farm director, and Andy McPhail called Gary Hughes. He said, oh, we love Hendry. He said he was Joe Hotshot college guy. We put him through the ringer. I made him even go get Fig Newtons for him in the draft, and he wasn't even pissed. I said, if he only knew. But, yeah, it was a great story. And years later, when I became the GM, he sent me a huge box with about 25 packages of fat-free Fig Newtons.
Oh, that's so great.
Yeah, it's good.
So great. You know, you went in as the farm director.
Right, and then became the scouting director. Andy asked me to change over and be the scouting director a year later, and then I did that for about 5 years, and the last two I did together, farm director and scouting director, and then became the assistant GM when Ed was let go, and then Andy made me the GM 2 years later.
And I remember walking down the hall where your office was, not your last office, but the office when you were running the farm and doing the scouting, and the Cubs had just traded for Matt Karchner, and they gave away John Garland.
Oh,
and I see you, and I go, hey, Jim, how you doing? You don't want to know.
Yeah, well, as a scouting director, you know, it's part of the business. And obviously, you know, Ed did what he had to do to get us in the playoffs that year. But John Garland, when we took John in the 97 draft, 10th in the country, he was the youngest player in the draft, the whole draft, and a first-round guy. So a year later, he was 18 in the Midwest League. And he turned out what we thought. We didn't think he was going to be Greg Maddux, but we thought he was going to be a
solid.
Yeah, and he pitched as a second, third starter for 7, 8 years. But it was like when you're the scouting director and you're trying to get the thing going, and to be honest, when like a lot of people, when I took over as a scouting director, our system wasn't good, and 4 or 5 years later, it became very highly ranked, and some of them didn't work out. But ranking-wise, we went from the bottom to near the top, and John was a big part of that already. And I think the White Sox were just doing cartwheels.
Right.
If you ask Kenny or Ron Shuler at the
time. We got who?
We got Garland, yeah. So not to demean Matt Kartzner, I mean, but when you're the scouting director, and 1 year later, John hadn't finished a full season yet in the Midwest League, and it was like, he's gone.
So when your GM calls you, he's your boss,
yeah,
and he says, hey, I'm doing this, do you at the other end of the phone go, are you out of your effing mind?
Well, we did have a little exchange on that one. But, you know, like good people, you don't take it to the street.
Right.
You know, you put on your happy face, and if it gets you in the postseason, then, you know, you did. And, you know, back then it was the world's so hard now. Like now everybody that doesn't hold up the trophy had a bad year, or somebody choked, or somebody didn't get. Back then, the difference maker in the game, not just the Cubs. Now, maybe not for the Yankees, how great they were, but you had a good season if you got in the postseason. And if you didn't get in, you didn't have a good season, you know. And we weren't good enough to win the World Championship that year. But at the time, Ed's third or fourth year there, for the franchise's sake, it was Sammy Sosa's home runs and pretty much it. And that at least put you back on the map a little bit, you know.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, so in hindsight, it was a great deal for the White Sox, but those things happen all the time, just like, you know, Jeff Bagwell got traded for Larry Anderson, or we can name 100 of them.
A million.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, thank you for the time.
You're welcome, Cap.
You're the best.
Thank you, brother.
You were always great to deal with.
You too.
He is. He's the great Jim Hendry, the former GM of the Cubs, and now one of the top guys in the Yankee system. We'll take a timeout on our My Teams app podcast, Cubs Talk Podcast, brought to you by Wintrust.
Cubs authentic fans, the My Teams app by NBC Sports is your home for Cubs highlights, articles, and more. For the best Cubs coverage anytime, anywhere, download the My Teams app today.
All right, welcome back on our Cubs Talk podcast. A lot of fun talking with Jim Hendry. That guy is the greatest.
Yeah, I got some big shoes to fill right now. Yeah. You got me after that?
Unbelievable. You can handle it.
All right.
All right, so the Cubs have not done anything yet. We saw the White Sox trade for Nomar Mazara. Not a huge deal, but an upgrade over what they had in right field.
Sure.
Are you hearing anything on the Cubs with the news this morning that the Rockies will entertain offers for Nolan Arenado?
No, I mean, honestly, sure, it affects the Chris Bryant trade market, but I don't think it really does that much. I mean, you're talking about a lot more money, obviously more years, too, than Bryant to commit. So it's a much larger commitment. It's honestly akin to the Anthony Rendon in free agency, but you'd also have to give up prospects or something else in return. So I think Arenado, you know, kind of falls at the bottom of the pecking order. It's still Rendon and Donaldson and then Chris Bryant after that and Arenado after that. So I don't think it'll have a huge factor in the Bryant trade market.
All right, here we are on Wednesday, and the Cubs have done literally nothing. Do you think now something gets done by tomorrow before they fly home, or you're pretty resolute that they're doing nothing?
I'm even more resolute now than when I was telling you Sunday night or Monday on this podcast here. It's looking more and more likely that nothing substantial will happen. Honestly, it's looking more and more likely that not even anything small will happen. You know, they were talking yesterday. Hoyer was talking about, you know, maybe adding a bullpen piece or some of the guys at the end of the bench, but I don't know if that's even going to be this week. It might still be next week, or it might be January. There's still some things the Cubs have to wait on and figure out.
So for Cub fans who are sitting at home saying, what do you mean they're cutting payroll? Jim talked earlier that it's cyclical, and the Yankees went 3 straight years where they did not go over the luxury tax, while now they're obviously all in with Gerrit Cole at $324 million. The fan at home doesn't want to hear that, but is it, in your opinion, being around the team, a smart decision that, look, if we're not at the precipice of trying to win the World Series, let's get back under the luxury tax and reset so we're not a repeater and then get after it again a year or so?
Yeah, absolutely. I know that would be a very unpopular opinion, but I do agree with that. I mean, this is an 84-win team coming off of that season, and they aren't just one or two pieces away. They're not like, you had Gerrit Cole, like, sure, this team is really, really good. I think it could easily make a run for the World Series, but as we talked about so many times in this podcast last year, they had so many holes they have to fill. obviously they have even more now with guys leaving in free agency. So you can't just throw money at the problem and keep doing that over and over again, because that's where you really get yourself into a bind years from now. So right now, if there's ever a time to scale it back, I think that's it. So yes, I think only coming under the luxury tax threshold, just because you don't want to keep being a repeat offender. And I think screwing up draft picks is more important than having to pay that tax that goes with it. So I think this now is the most important time. And then maybe 2021 and so on, they can retool a bit.
Yeah, that's where I think it's at. And I know fans at home don't want to hear that.
Right.
Because they pay $14 a beer and they pay second highest ticket prices, and they're going to be, you know, asked to support their TV and whatever else is out there. But it is a business, number one. Mm-hmm. And as Hendry said, look, you're still going to have plenty of money where, if you're one of these upper tier teams, to win. You have to spend your money correctly.
Yeah, I mean, you know, luxury tax is $208 million. Only three teams went over it last year, the Cubs being one of them. So, yeah, I mean, if you can't win on a $208 million payroll, then you obviously are not doing things right. So, and that's not a direct criticism or anything of Theo and Jed. They say it all the time. They have to be better with the money they've had. Theo has said that for a year and a half now, that, you know, they've got had more than enough money and financial issues to win. You know, like, that hasn't been the issue. It's not like they're pulling back at the right time. And even last year, we saw that with Craig Kimbrel. Like, yeah, Ben Zobrist money came off the books being on the restricted list, but they still went out and offered Kimbrel money for 2020 and for 2021 as well. So the money has always been there when they need it. Maybe not as much to some fans' liking, but when you're talking about $230 million payroll last year, like that's enough. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you should be able to win.
Yeah.
All right, well, we'll see you at Theo's media briefing later. White Sox also got good news. Hawk Harrelson's going in, so check out our My Teams app for the latest on Hawk headed to Cooperstown. For Tony, for Jim Hendry, for our great crew, we'll see you tomorrow on the Cubs Talk podcast, brought to you by Wintrust, live from the Baseball Winter Meetings in San Diego.